Reading, hi, this is Good morning, Reading. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460. Another glorious day. Well, gosh, I think we're just going to go right to our caller on the line. Do we have Mary?
Yes.
Hi, Mary. Hey, thanks for calling in. You know, this is Mary Occasion from Churn Creek Meadows Organic Farm. And, Mary, you and Albert, you do your fabulous home delivery of vegetables, fruits that come right to your door. And, you know, I wanted to talk to you about that a little bit. You know, the season's starting back up. Everybody's thinking about their vegetables again. You know, we're going into, you know, we're looking at our land, we're looking at the earth, trying to figure out if we're going to plant something or if we're just going to order vegetables from you. And I came up with the fact that we're just going to order vegetables from you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. And so, like, how's everything going over at your place here in Reading? Are the plants
going well? Yeah, we're planting greens right now. Yesterday we planted broccoli, more kale, more of the other spring greens, and we're getting our tomatoes started this weekend in flats.
Great!
They'll be going out into the fields. We usually plant about 1,000 plants. Last year we had 32 different varieties of heirloom tomatoes, and we start them this time of year, and they're usually about 8 weeks old by the time they go out into the field so that they're good and sturdy.
Wow.
So we'll be planting late April and early May for those summer crops.
Now, how about the growing season for the land that you have down in the Bay Area? When are you going to start working with that land?
Well, we have actually 3 farm sites right now.
Oh, you have 3.
We had one in Orange County also, so we had 4. But we've actually lost the one in Orange County. What happened was it was a very small lot that in Yorba Linda with avocados and citrus, and the woman who owned it, she passed away, and her kids have it up for sale. So we took it out of our certificate.
I see.
So right now we have the 2 parcels in Churn Creek Bottom. One where we live, and we grow all of our row crops there, and we also have about 1 acre of grapevines there and some orchard trees. And then we also have a site with about 1 acre to somewhere between 1 acre and 2 acres of grapevines about 1 mile down Churn Creek Road, still in Churn Creek Bottom, of grapes. And then we have 7 acres down in Anderson that we manage. Five acres there is irrigated pasture, and 2 acres is basically nut crops. We have walnuts and pecans there.
Now, for those folks who may just be hearing about you for the first time, they can go to your website. Now, what is your website?
It's www.ccm. like Mary or Meadow Organic Farm, Churn Creek Meadow Organic Farm. And you could Google us to find us. We're also listed on the Local Harvest website. A lot of people find us that way.
Okay.
And my email address is mary@ccmof.com, and you're welcome to send me an email. If you have questions, the contact us through our website goes straight to my email.
Now, a few months ago at Sequoia Middle School, there was a nice one-day symposium where, you know, a lot of farmers got together. They were sort of directed through a day of problem-solving maybe a little bit and sort of some vision work. And
yes, the Go Local
the Go Local group
put that together.
And it sounds like some of the takeaway concept, maybe the number one takeaway concept, was that people needed more education as to why organic food, clean food that isn't sprayed with what I call cancer juice, you know. So if you get clean food, you know, there just needs to be more education. So what have you come up with as far as trying to get the word out about the importance of clean food?
Well, the Go Local group is working on several things along those lines, and in our situation, I make myself available to go out to classrooms on some Fridays.
Good.
I make myself available. Yeah, and I actually have something set up down in Cottonwood for March 18th at in a junior high classroom where I'm going to be talking to the kids about our farm and show them a slideshow. I have talked also with an English class at Shasta College, and I am available for that. I'll do farm tours by appointment also, but mainly what we do is we do the deliveries and we do events at the farm, and about two times a year, sometimes more, and we sell at the farmer's market. And we're very open to talking with people about, of course, the reasons to buy local and buy organic.
Oh, wonderful. You know, can you take the listeners through your options on your website? You can get a box, a smaller box of fruits and vegetables, larger. You can have any kind of delivery. You can do monthly. You can do weekly, what the prices are. Can you take
sure.
us through that? Okay.
Yeah, we have five different boxes available. And one is called the Gourmet Market Box. It's $30, and it has usually 12 to 14 different items that range from like a pound and a half of each of them. And the box is a pretty good size box, and you have to really set yourself up to eating at home or taking your lunch with you to use that box within a week. If there's just two of you, or if there's four in the household, I think that, you know, it would go pretty quickly. The biggest complaint that we have is that people don't use everything and they feel wasteful. And so for those people, we have options that they could order every other week or once a month. And some people just don't use all the vegetables that we provide because of one thing or another. They don't know what to do with it. We try to provide recipes and provide one or two recipes every week, but sometimes it really doesn't get them motivated to use everything and they feel wasteful. So my recommendation is then order the fruit box and add the vegetables that you know you're going to eat.
Oh, I see.
We send out an extras list on Sunday to everyone that's on the list of our box customers that should receive a box that week, and it's the reminder that, hey, a box is coming this week. Let us know if you're going to be on vacation or if you want a different box, but we've got, you know, someone set for a box. And on that extras list, we list everything that we have that they can use to substitute. So we allow two substitutions. So say you grow your own oranges, which a lot of people do, then you can tell us, instead of the oranges, I would rather have more broccoli or something like that. And we're willing to do that. We also have farm fresh eggs from our own chickens that we sell through our extras list. And we give a little bit of farm news every week in that. And we sell rice from Lundberg Family Farms. It's certified organic rice by the pound.
Excellent. Okay, we'll give folks your contact information again, and we'll get everybody inspired here to get on the bus with you guys. It's great.
Okay, the contact information is www.ccmof.com.
And they can just sign up for the basket, right? They can sign up for the basket online, piece of cake?
Exactly, and you could choose the gourmet market box, the small gourmet market box, which is $24, the gourmet veggie box is $25, the raw box, which is everything in that box can be eaten raw. You don't have to cook it. And that one's $35.50. It's a large box.
Okay,
and
you know,
the fruit box, $22.
I was surprised, and every time we get your box of fruits and vegetables, I'm just shocked at the quality. And today I finally pulled out my Brix meter, which is a refractometer, which you can kind of look through and you can see the vitality and the quality of the nutrients. And so I was holding it up to the light, and I put a little bit of apple pulp on the refractometer, which shines through a prism. And 18 is supposed to be just a really high reading, and the apple was 22, and I'm like, wow, okay,
great.
That's good.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you. I love to hear that.
I know. So keep up whatever you're doing, just keep it up. So, hey,
thank you.
Going to go to a commercial, and I want to thank you for calling in. And so we want to really support you this veggie season and get anybody who wants to have vegetables and fruits delivered, we want them to know about you so that they can enjoy all this goodness. So thanks for calling in. Yeah. And this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. You're listening to Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460. We'll be right back.
What do you look?
Chicken, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Welcome back. Hey, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to Positively Healthy. In the studio, our next guest is Pamela Smith from Empire Recovery. And good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Now, did I say it right?
Well, I work at Empire Outpatient up in Shasta Lake. But I've also worked and went through Empire here downtown on California Street.
Okay.
Here in California Street, they have a detox. So if somebody wants to stop using, that's kind of the first place to go is detox. You detox for a couple of days. You get cared for, and hopefully the hope is that you're going to want to go into the treatment center, which is downstairs.
Okay.
And
so
that's 30, 60, or 90 days worth of treatment.
Okay, let's back this up a second.
Cause, mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're out at
Outpatient.
Shasta Lake.
In Shasta
okay.
Lake.
And a lot of us have driven past the Empire Recovery on California Street. And that's just meth, or is that alcohol?
No, it's alcohol. It's any kind of drugs that does not need medical intervention for the detox or the step down.
Okay, and who gets to go there?
Anybody. It's funded somewhat with United Way funds, private insurance, private pay.
Okay.
And they work with you on the fees on that. I don't do a lot of the residential, so I wouldn't know what that looks like, but I can give you that number. The detox is if you want to come off of meth, if you want to come off of alcohol, if you want to come off certain medications or other drugs, they have a detox up there. You can be up there for 3 days to 7 days, depending on what your needs are. Sometimes when people have stopped using, it's 3 days after they stop using before they start feeling the effects of the detox. And so they have an extended detox if that's what you need.
Yeah, okay. And then, so the longer detox is in downtown Reading and yours is shorter, outpatient
okay, so
detox?
You start in detox. That's sort of the acute withdrawal. You're post-acute, you got 30, 60, or 90 days, say, in residential.
Okay.
And you want to get yourself clean. You want to learn how to stay clean.
Yeah.
Big problem. People don't know how to stay clean.
I bet.
Okay, and so for the follow-through and the continuum of care, we have outpatient, which people come to 3 times a week. We're also having people start into the 12-step community. Okay, so it's a big deal to get involved in the 12-step community. And we're talking AA, NA, we're talking, Al-Anon, we're talking codependence. There's a huge, huge 12-step community in this area.
Okay. Now, when we just look at meth, how do we compare to other communities?
Oh, Shasta County is just, there's meth everywhere. It's kind of like hot and cold, wind and water. Shasta County, there is a high incidence of meth, and rural areas tend to have a lot more meth for some reason. I don't know what the reasons are, but
okay, is it that we make more of it here?
Maybe we make more of it. It's actually less and less of these clandestine labs and more coming up from Mexico, but there are still a lot of clandestine labs. Mostly people are doing it in their kitchen, cooking it up for them and their friends at this point.
Okay.
There are clandestine labs in this area, but I'm not sure that it's like it used to be.
Yeah.
Now,
what's the attraction? I know that's kind of a naive question, but what's the attraction?
It's a stimulant.
Okay.
There's euphoria. It makes you feel very, very good. It keeps you awake. A lot of women get involved with it because it helps you lose weight.
Ah.
A lot of students get involved because they want to study longer, you know. They want to be able to be a more alert people. The alertness is part of the appeal.
Okay, so, you know, that goes along with the fact that the number one complaint in the United States is fatigue, you know. So one way to try to balance that out would be looking for some substance to bring you back up.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we need to go to a quick break here, but this is interesting. We're going to come back with Pamela Smith. We're going to talk about meth use in Shasta County. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to Positively Healthy on KCNR 1460.
You're more mom and lass, just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Welcome back. Hi, you're listening to Positively Healthy here on KCNR 1460, home of Free Fire Media. And in the studio, we have Pamela Smith, and we're talking about methamphetamines. And during the break, we talked a little bit about the history. So, Pamela, welcome back.
Hello.
Hey, and I wanted to tell us a little bit about the history of meth.
Well, here in California, meth has been around since late 60s, early 70s, maybe even a little earlier than that. It in the beginning was a biker thing. I won't say this biker or that biker, but I will say it was a biker thing.
She did during the break, though.
there was a lot of meth in the biker communities and the people who are around bikers and stuff. There was a lot of meth way back then, you know. As it has come through the time, since about the 90s, I think, maybe late 80s, it started turning into something more from down south, down in Mexico. There used to be clandestine labs all over the hills, all over Northern California, big labs. But there's not anymore. There's less and less. There are clandestine labs. It's still a really big problem because of the toxins that are generated in a meth lab. There's not near as many as there used to be. You used to be able to drive around and smell them.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I remember down in Sonoma County, you could smell them.
Oh, my.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the recovery process, now how long does it take for someone to sort of get meth out of their system?
Just to get it out of your system, first you want to stop using, and that's what detox is for.
Okay.
And you take 3 to 7 days to get it just, you know, out of your immediate system. That's acute withdrawal.
Yeah.
Post-acute withdrawal, we're talking now, it can take up to 30 days for it to sort of flush through your system. But if you're talking about out of your system, out of your body completely, we're talking about 9 months to a year.
Okay, I figured,
you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so the first part is to get them to stop using.
Yes.
And then you were saying, like, just the environment
starts
to be the biggest thing.
Yes, the social aspect is huge.
Yeah.
You know, when people just stopping using is not enough. Just saying no is not enough. You have to follow that up with community support. You also have to follow that up with social support and education, okay? If I'm learning about what my body is doing and how my brain is processing and how I'm thinking, you know, and how the urges and the cravings keep coming back and why they keep coming back, okay, the nature of compulsive, obsessive behavior and thought processes, okay, then at least I know what's going on with me. And
mm-hmm.
I'm going to learn that. I'm going to learn that in treatment, and I'm also going to learn that in the 12-step community.
Yeah.
Okay, from other recovering addicts. I'm also going to learn in the 12-step community that there are people who have 20 years clean off of meth and that have done it. Or there are people who are, you know, one young man that's very, very young, and he's got a couple of years clean, and that's amazing to older people who come into recovery. They've been doing it all their life, all their adult life, and they see these youngsters that had had enough early on. They get inspired.
Now, what does meth do to your body? Like, what kind of... Yeah.
It's a highly toxic substance. If I were to tell you everything that went into the meth they make today, let's just say I'm not going to do all of that because I'm not going to inspire any of that, but I will say that there is lye in the process, purine.
Which is why those of us who make soap, you know, like, you can't even get lye anymore. It's
mm-hmm.
really hard to get.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, and there's other things involved, lithium from batteries, and I mean, it's just this stuff is going into the body.
Oh, my goodness.
It's horrible. You know, so it's affecting, first and foremost, most people know this, the meth mouth, the teeth, Okay?
We see that when we go on the internet to look at the jail pictures, you know, who's in jail. Yeah.
By the way, I can tell you there's a significant amount of those people who are in custody that are in or about the meth community. Significant amount of people. But what it's doing to your body, so now you've got this toxin running through your body. It's in your liver. It's in your kidneys. It's in your lungs. So now here goes your face. Here goes your metabolism, because a lot of people, especially women, they come into recovery and their metabolism is shot, and then they start gaining weight. So what is she going to do? She's going to go back out and start using if she doesn't find a new way to live. And there again is the 12-step community teaching her a new way to live, you know, and supporting her in her cravings. It's extremely toxic to the body. The hair is affected. The skin is affected. Your nails are affected. Your thought processes, what it does to your brain and how you think and the violence that comes out of it. And
tell us about that. That's interesting to me.
I think of, you know, you're overstimulating your brain constantly.
Yeah.
Constantly. It's being overstimulated. You're depleting your Your kind of all your lens, there's stuff going on in your neurons and transmitters and stuff, and those are being depleted because you're so overwhelming and you're just pumping them out when you're doing the meth. That's where the high comes from.
Okay,
so now
then they run out.
Then they run out, and you're not making it normally. So when you stop, now you've got this little, your body's going whoa, and it's actually detoxing from the stuff that it doesn't have, that it really, really needs to make naturally, but you've just depleted it.
Wow.
So you've got this great high and this euphoria, but once you start doing it for a while, then it starts twisting your brain and your thought processes, okay? And then you come down, and now you're probably mad and agitated and twitchy and all these other things, you know, and all you really want to do is get high again. But it's going to take more to get you high. And more.
How expensive is meth? Like, what does it take to get that high?
You know, it's not very expensive. That's why it's so prevalent in the rural communities.
Okay.
You know, it's pretty cheap. It's pretty cheap.
How cheap?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's been a while since I've been in the community. But, you know, for a $20 bag, what do they call that, a quarter tea? You know?
Like, so that would make one, like, one that, big kind of binge night or something?
Yeah,
or
but a binge. But, you know, for a newcomer in the meth, that $20 bag will last you overnight or so, but you'll be up for a day and a half, 2 days on.
Unbelievable. You know? That is inexpensive enough to really be, that would create vulnerability.
And, you know, think about it. Somebody who's toxing their bodies out and doing all the stuff to their brains and staying up for days and days at a time, now you've really got a recipe for disaster.
Oh, definitely. We're going to take a radio break here. And, hey, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to Positively Healthy. We're going to be back with a little bit more of Pamela Smith talking about methamphetamines right after this. Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to Positively Healthy, and we're finishing up with Pamela Smith from Empire Outreach. Am I saying that wrong?
Outpatient.
Why can't I get that?
I don't know.
It's just so easy, and it's so hard for me. So I want to thank you for coming in today.
Sure, no
and
problem.
The thing I still want to touch on here is this really sad point, which is that the chances of someone recovering after they've started to use meth, it's pretty low.
You know, it is. The numbers are pretty low. They don't... getting treatment isn't enough.
Okay.
You know, getting treatment isn't enough. You have to follow it up. You have to follow it up with a lifestyle change and a social change, and all these other things have to happen. And a lot of people, they come into treatment, and then they go straight back to where they were, and then what's going to happen? The same thing's going to start happening. So the willingness has to be there to change everything. And that's difficult. That's difficult.
Yeah.
You know, at best.
That's drastic.
And
then also, you know, we know that learning this from you, I mean, meth touches our community. It touches, you know, coworkers. It touches families.
Yes.
It breaks up marriages. It does a lot of things. How do people find you and your group?
Well, one of the ways that people can find us is just to call the hotline, and they'll get you in touch. But you can call down here at the Empire. 243-7470.
Okay.
Or you can call out to Shasta Lake, 275-1076.
And when you say the hotline, what's that?
That's the crisis hotline, the community crisis hotline. It's in the phone book.
Okay.
But, it's important that people understand, if you're not affected, you know somebody who is directly affected. In the community, you're going to know somebody whose life is affected by methamphetamine. I guarantee it.
To start strengthening our community is to keep trying to help people get tougher and stronger. And
treatment, man. Keep doing treatment. Sometimes it doesn't stick at first.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes more than one trip through treatment. You know, don't give up. Don't give up. If you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, if you don't want to live this way anymore, don't give up. Just keep reaching out, man. Keep doing it.
Excellent advice. Thank you so much for coming on. You're listening to Positively Healthy. Don't go away. We've got more special guests to come in. This is Dr. Trudy Pratt. We'll be right back. Oh, welcome back. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Positively Healthy on KCNR 1460, one of Reading's newest radio stations. Been here a little over a year. And welcome. Welcome to the station. Now, our next guest is Henry Cuenca, and he is from Life Help. That's a national company that offers insurance to credit union members. And, Henry could have a business anywhere, and he chose to be right here in Reading. And so Life Help is located out on Lockheed Drive.
Drive.
Okay. Across from the Reading Airport, he has about 20 employees. And, one of his passions is volunteering, and he is a volunteer chaplain at the jail. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
Nice to have you
thank
here today.
You very much.
And our co-host today is Mark Beecham. Mark, welcome.
Thanks, Trudy.
Yeah. And so I want to start out, I want to talk a little bit about the jail because, first of all, we know that they're having a little financial crisis over there, and some of us watch these websites that show pictures of who's in jail, and sometimes they look like, you've got people really in the middle of a crisis going on, and you are a volunteer chaplain, and how did you get into that, and what's it like?
Well, it was probably by accident that I was became a chaplain at the jail, and I was asked by a Dr. Baker, who was a head chaplain at the county jail, asked me if I would be interested in consoling, speaking with inmates that requested time to speak to a chaplain. So I met with the appropriate people in the jail, and I was checked out, and they do background checks and so forth and so on, and was finally approved to be a chaplain. And I've served that position pretty much over 4 years, and to this day still have inmates that I visit on a frequent basis.
Now, how do they find you, or how does that work, or do they put in a request, or?
Well, it starts from the inmates themselves, and the inmate makes a request that they would like to speak with a chaplain. So that request comes up the channel, and they call. We have more than one chaplain, so they call various chaplains to consult with an individual inmate. So basically it starts with the inmate themselves making a request that they would like to meet with me.
I see. Now, what are the common, what kind of crisis are they in when they need to talk to you? What's plaguing them?
They're in pretty bad shape, to really be honest with you.
Yeah.
Many of the inmates that I meet with are facing 39 to life, third offense. Many are thinking of committing suicide.
Just because the outlook is so grim?
It's so grim. There's just nothing for them. Many of these inmates, their families have been cut them off. They have no spouses. Children won't speak to them. And so they're pretty isolated, and it gets pretty lonely. And the only life, any movement in their life are their court hearings. And when their appointed attorney schedules an appointment, or they have a trial date coming up and that sort of thing. But other than that, it can be a pretty lonely, desolate place. So Many of them find strength and refuge by calling for a chaplain like myself to go in and visit with them. So they're pretty bad shape. It's not uncommon to meet with these fellows, befriend them, and really truly understand their inner workings, and they're very, very open. Once you develop a little relationship,
okay.
And they share with you their innermost thought of thinking of committing suicide.
Wow. Mark?
And
yeah, Henry, you mentioned during the break that obviously you go in to the jail to meet with prisoners. But you mentioned that there's also an option for people on the outside to correspond mm-hmm. with prisoners and to... Mm-hmm. strike up a relationship with them by writing to them, and that is much less labor-intensive than what you do, but it could be very beneficial to the prisoners, right?
Oh, absolutely. These prisoners, for the most part, realize that they've done some bad deeds, and they realize that there are social responsibilities and accountability for doing acts that shouldn't have been done. Most are very remorseful. You get underneath that initial pretense. I mean, most of them are very remorseful of what they've done and are looking for in any way of contacting normalcy. And a simple thing like writing an inmate, even though you don't know this person and the chances and likelihood that you're never going to meet them, but the idea of actually having a human intervention with somebody that really cares about it is profound.
So they don't know you, you don't know them, but they would like to get a letter from?
Absolutely, and there are programs within the jail system, you know, where there are pen pal relationships, and I would be happy to forward to you, you know, the specific information as to who, how, where, and how they go about writing somebody,
yeah.
Right? But they're very touching. I mean, the internally, it's very touching for an inmate to receive a letter from the community.
Oh, my goodness. How inspiring.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, these folks that are feeling suicidal, how do you comfort them? What do you say to them?
Well, you understand, we come from a spiritual base,
mm-hmm.
right? And my approach is I ask a lot of questions. I don't make a lot of big pretenses, but I truly try to understand how they got to where they are.
Yeah.
What dynamics and what experiences did they have in their life or growing up and broken families and so forth and so on. I truly try to understand how this individual got to where they did. And it's only when you really understand the unfortunate circumstances that many of these inmates had, you know, not knowing their father, not knowing their mother, or having their uncles, half a dozen of their uncles in prison, suicidal, drugs, heroin, this whole culture of growing up.
That's not even that strange. They're in jail. It's just what the family does,
precisely.
In a way.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. Three generations of prison people, you know, and many of the inmates that I meet with, you know, have served 10, 15 years in state prison. They know nothing else but prison, right? And so they get released and they do another dumb thing. And here we go again. So I think that to really console and understand these people, you really need to understand them, right? You really, truly need to understand them. Nearly all the inmates that I've met with, you know, are believers in God. I mean, we do have that in common. They do believe in a higher authority of God. So as a chaplain, you know, we're there to console them and talk about spiritual things and to have them explain to me, you know, how they believe in God and how God touches their lives. And we try to reinforce that stronger belief, you know, and commitment and that will bring solace to them. I've had many prisoners, and I say this many because the vast majority of prisoners that I've met with, you know, I've had some highly emotional encounters with these folks because, you know, largely they don't know the understanding of love, right? I mean, their life has been temporal. It's from one drug hit to another drug hit.
Yeah.
And one relationship to the other, and one job to the other. And so, you know, I had one visitor, one inmate that I saw during the holidays here a year or two ago. And I dropped in just out of intuition that I should go see him. And he had been cut off from everybody. He was facing 39 years to life. Had nobody in his life. And so I went to see him, and he told me he was very happy to see me, and that it was very difficult for him during the holidays. And he told me he was thinking of committing suicide. So, you know, I had a really good session with him. And he made the comment that nobody loved him. So I looked at him and I grabbed his hand and I said, I love you. He was so taken.
Wow.
So taken by a simple act of expressing care for him, that he just was bawling, just crying, and he got up.
You mean like
up.
Everyone in our studio right now?
Yeah. And he got up and he says, can I hug you? And I said, absolutely. When I meet with my prisoners, we meet one-to-one. We're not behind glass.
Oh, I see. Right? Okay.
And I said, of course you can. So we were in embrace for the longest time. So there's enormous gratification.
I would guess so. Yeah.
In all aspects of giving, not only, you know, giving to the inmates, you know, when I have the occasion to become really intimate, and generally I get pretty close to the folks that I work with. So
didn't you plan a wedding?
Yeah, I had one inmate.
Oh, I'm getting the break sign. All right, darn. All right, Henry, don't go anywhere. Okay. Hey, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. You're listening to Positively Healthy, and we're going to come back with more of Henry Cuenca right after this.
Today, most...
Oh, welcome back. Hey, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt, and you're listening to Positively Healthy on KCNR 1460. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Henry Cuenca. And Henry, along with, I guess, your son is the CEO?
Yes, okay. We've recently transitioned the company to our son, Ryan.
Okay.
And he is now CEO
of Life Help, right out on Lockheed, right across from the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, we're just sort of enthralled by the fact that you are one of the chaplains at the jail, the county jail right over here in downtown, and you're telling us a story. And so go ahead and tell us some more about this. You set up a wedding.
Well, I had formed a what I feel is a really good relationship with an inmate that was also facing a lifetime sentence. And he was pretty much down and out. I mean, life didn't look good for him. He had already served many years in state penitentiary, and here he's facing a lifetime situation. And I could tell through my visits with him that there was only really one thing that really turned him on, and that was when he was able to talk about his daughters. He had two daughters living in Oregon, and they were like 9 and 7 years old. And he would just literally light up when he talked about his daughters. And he would have like a half a microsecond of conversations with them, because he would call collect, and the operator would take the call and ask for the receiving party if there's somebody to accept the phone call. Well, that was just sort of a bogus situation, simply because it was the daughters who were going to be able to answer the phone. So he would have like 1 or 2 seconds to speak with them before the operator would pull the pull the call. So in any event, his common-law wife wanted to get married, even though that there was a good chance that he was going to get life. And he, of course, really didn't want to get married because he would never be able to be with his wife and his children. But so he was really not sure what he should do, whether he should go get married. And then the idea, if he was to get married, he didn't have the money to get married. The wife didn't have the gas to drive down from Klamath Falls to Redding. And just the whole process was more beyond of what he could do. So my wife and I, Mary Ann, we decided that we were going to have a wedding.
Oh, I love it. There will be a wedding.
Yes. So we made arrangements for the bride-to-be to drive down. And believe this, she was going to spend the night in the car, right? And we said, no way. We're just not going to allow that. We're going to take care of your housing for the evening. We went out to the county. I got the records, went to the bail bondsman because you need a signature of somebody to go in the jail and get a signature, certified signature. I arranged for the preacher, got all the licenses, and arranged everything for the day of the wedding. So she drove down from Klamath Falls. I met her at Lake Shasta City and filled up her gas tank. It was running on empty, and we proceeded to have a wedding in the Shasta County Jail. So it was just a wonderful opportunity, you know, to be able to put something like that together, because the reality was they had under no circumstances would they have been able to come up with the $400 to conduct the wedding. And the unfortunate thing is he was shipped out of Shasta County Jail and went on to a state penitentiary. And so I was never able to connect with him to congratulate him.
Oh, what a beautiful story.
So it was just a very moving situation. To be in that position to be able to do that for somebody, he really loved the girls.
Yeah.
He really loved his girls.
Oh, that's gorgeous. Now, go ahead, Mark.
You mentioned a couple of these prisoners who are facing life sentences. Not to get into the politics of it necessarily, but is this the practical result of the three strikes and your outlaw?
Where
people have done time for felonies prior, and then they get picked up for another felony. It could be something relatively minor, like stealing a bottle of bourbon from a liquor store, and then they get put away for life.
Exactly. I don't think that I have had one inmate that has been charged for murder. I don't think I've had one. So they're all minor offenses, three strikes, you're out situations.
And do you have any opinions about that law, or maybe that's an inappropriate question?
Well, you know, I believe that we're all responsible for all acts and deeds. So I'm not trying to wash over the fact that they're prejudiced against inmates. But the reality is, if you break social rules and laws, then you have to be accountable for that. But on the other hand, you know, I view a prisoner as a person that, due to their experiences, it has led them to do acts that are against society. So while I can understand the judicial process, but I also see underneath that judicial process a human being that's really screwed up, right? But that human being has the same things, emotions that we do, you know, fear, love, anxiety, food, pain, the very same things. We're no different. And it just so happens that they have made some wrong choices. So I kind of side emotionally with these inmates, because you get past that exterior, you know, they're human beings, mm-hmm. and they're very bright people. I mean, I don't think that I've met with one inmate that I wouldn't say is very
could run your company.
Yeah, he's very smart.
They're
very smart people.
Oh, excellent. Okay, well that concludes our show, and I want to thank you for coming on today. And we have had interesting guests today. I've absolutely loved it, and we're very, very lucky that the Cuencas decided that they loved houseboating and skiing and all the things on Shasta Lake, because that's how they found Redding. And do join us next Saturday. We'll be back with more of Positively Healthy on KCNR. Have a great afternoon. Bye.